You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-token lovers of liberty. Welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, January 7th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Yeah, so glad you could be here today. We got a fantastic show for you today on this Hemp Day Hump Day. Author Doug Fine is in studio with us, author of Hempbound, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Next Agricultural Revolution, as well as the fine, fine book, Too High to Fail. He'll be here in studio at 1:30. We'll be talking to him about his testimony at the Oregon legislature with respect to the hemp industry here in this state, as well as what's happening in the world of industrial hemp throughout the entire planet. So stay tuned for that. We'll go two segments on that as well. We'll take your live calls at 971-533-7111. If you've got any questions for one of America's leading experts on industrial hemp, today is the day to get that question in. Also on today's show, we've got some drug war data mining to do. Yesterday, I took a look at the two-year report that Project SAM put out, saying how terrible things are since we've legalized marijuana. Now we're going to take a look at our side. The Drug Policy Alliance has their two-year report out, and of course, it's filled with fact, science, reason, and logic. So it'll be nice to take a look at that one in contrast to yesterday's Reefer Madness. And speaking of Reefer Madness, I don't know if you've seen this article. It's been going around on various news sites. I saw it on the Chicago Tribune. A woman by the name of, what was her name? Let me see if I can find that. Oh, yes, Susan Shapiro, that's it. Susan Shapiro has written this piece that's entitled, So You Think Marijuana Isn't Addictive? And details her 27-year odyssey as a marijuana addict. And she spouts just about all of the reefer madness lies that we have heard over the past 5-6 years. We're just going to debunk them one by one like the little ducks in the shooting gallery at the fair, man. So stay tuned for that coming up in Reefer Madness today, which is going to be right after our 420 radio news. And in the headlines today, some of the Republicans in Oklahoma are starting to understand the unintended consequences of suing Colorado over legalized marijuana. We've got Illinois, one of the medical marijuana states that's been dragging its feet, coming up with possibly more conditions that would qualify for medical marijuana. We got to look at Washington State, where the prices are finally coming down, but they're still not quite low enough yet. We've got a look from researchers at suicide rates in the medical marijuana states and some stunning information about how medical marijuana affects suicide rates. And finally, we'll take a look at Uruguay, the South American country that's had a year of marijuana legalization. We'll see how that has been going in Uruguay, the good and the bad, all coming up in the 420 radio news. And then, of course, don't forget, we've got Toker Talk Radio coming up in hour two at 4:00. We take your live calls at 971-533-7111. A couple of the stories we're working on for Toker Talk Radio includes a look back at Illinois and how they might qualify some more conditions, and a story up in Washington State where a family was fighting to prevent a pot shop from going into business near them because, you know, won't somebody think of the children? And there's been a ruling on that that is called a partial victory by King 5 News up there in Seattle. We'll tell you all about that coming up in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Plus, you'll get your Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tunes from Gordon Green, who's got another great world music tune for us. All that coming up in the next jam-packed 2 hours of the Russ Belville Show. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, January 7th, 2015. 7 Oklahoma Republicans have come out in opposition to the state's lawsuit against Colorado for legalizing marijuana. In a Wednesday letter to Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt, who, along with Nebraska Attorney General, filed suit in December against Colorado, the group of Republicans argue the suit poses a risk to the state's 10th Amendment rights. In the suit, Pruitt said Colorado's legalization of recreational marijuana injured the ability of Oklahoma and other bordering states to enforce their marijuana laws and violates the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, giving federal law precedence over state ones. But the group of Republicans think if the lawsuit was successful at the Supreme Court, it could, quote, undermine all those efforts to protect our own state's right to govern itself, end quote. Gun control advocates in New York, for instance, could argue that Virginia's lax gun laws injure their ability to regulate firearms. Illinois is now accepting petitions to expand the list of medical conditions that qualify for treatment with marijuana, though officials have yet to name the board that will decide the issue. The state also hasn't named which applicants will be awarded licenses to grow and sell medical pot, which officials had planned to do before the end of 2014. Despite the delays, the state is accepting petitions through February 28th to add new qualifying medical conditions. Petitions are online at the Illinois Department of Public Health's website. The law lists about 36 conditions that can qualify someone to apply to use marijuana legally, including cancer, glaucoma, and rheumatoid arthritis. Each petition may nominate only one condition, and it must be specific according to state requirements. The most likely condition to be added, advocates say, is post-traumatic stress disorder, which could help veterans. A more controversial addition would be for chronic or severe pain. Shortages that plagued the start of Washington State's legal marijuana market have eased, sending prices in recreational pot stores down as much as 40%. Seattle's first pot shop, Cannabis City, ran out of marijuana in 3 days when it opened in July. Since then, the state has licensed more growers, processors, and retailers, increasing supply and reducing prices to an average of $15 a gram, says Randy Simmons, a deputy director of the Washington State Liquor Control Board. Prices were as much as $25 a gram in July, including taxes. Even after the decline, that's still 50% more than the $10 a gram available on the black market, board officials said in an interview yesterday at Bloomberg's offices in Seattle. Challenges remain in the state's attempt to supplant illegal sellers. An effective tax rate of 44% on recreational pot is keeping many buyers in the still unregulated market for medical marijuana. In a new brief published by the Cato Institute called High on Life, Medical Marijuana Laws and Suicide, researchers report that the passage of a state medical marijuana law, quote, is associated with an almost 5% reduction in the total suicide rate, end quote. Researchers D. Mark Anderson, Daniel I. Rees, and Joseph J. Sabia, quote, conclude that legalization of medical marijuana leads to fewer suicides among young adult males, end quote. Building on 2012 research, Anderson, Rees, and Sabia analyzed Centers for Disease Control data from 1990 through 2007. Quote, when we examine the relationship between legalization and suicides by gender and age, we find evidence that medical marijuana laws are associated with decreased suicides among 20 to 29-year-old males and among 30 through 39-year-old males. The result is consistent with registry data from Arizona, Colorado, and Montana, showing that most medical marijuana patients are male and that roughly half are under the age of 40, end quote. Under Uruguay's new marijuana legalization, cannabis users can either grow weed at home or join a cannabis club, paying fees to be part of a collective that grows and harvests pot. As a result, legal cannabis cultivation is thriving in Uruguay. In December, Julio Calzada, head of the National Drug Commission, announced that the government had registered 1,200 cannabis growers and about 500 clubs, progress he said was encouraging. But a year into the new system, it's still impossible to buy marijuana legally. To date, the Uruguayan government still hasn't chosen the companies that will grow its cannabis. The street price of marijuana, however, has been in decline since the new law passed because local growers have stepped in to meet demand and because pot users can now grow their own weed with impunity. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, January 7th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
International Cannabis Business Conference is coming to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, 2015. Don't miss this exclusive opportunity to hear from the experts on the future of marijuana commerce, including scientists like Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Amanda Ryman, and Dr. Stanton Peel, policy experts like Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, Anthony Johnson from Oregon's Legalization Campaign, travel author Rick Steves from Washington's Legalization Campaign, and California legalization pioneer Dale Sky Jones. Business experts like Harborside's Steve D'Angelo, ArcView Group's Troy Dayton, and UFCW union leader Dan Rush. Cannabis journalists like Ricardo Baca, Steve Bloom, and Doug Fine, and California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, plus many, many more. Tickets are on sale now at internationalcbc.com, but hurry, last year's conference in Portland, Oregon was a sellout. International Cannabis Business Conference, San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, internationalcbc.com.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he dropped it from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 and a half after the hour. And today in Reefer Madness Debunked, we take a look at the widely shared article that I'm looking at the Chicago Tribune called So You Think Marijuana Isn't Addictive by Susan Shapiro. The tweet line on this has been why legalizing marijuana will lead to more drug addiction, and I could not let any of this stand without a rebuttal. She writes that in 2014, our country went cannabis crazy, and she knows about the dark side of marijuana because she was addicted for 27 years. 27 years. Oh, my goodness. Okay. She says she started to smoke weed at Bob Dylan concerts when she was 13. I saw how it can make you say and do things that are provocative and perilous. I bought pot in bad neighborhoods at 3 a.m., confronted a dealer for selling me a dime bag of oregano, let shady pushers I barely knew deliver marijuana like pizza to my home. I mailed weed to my vacation spots and smoked a cocaine-laced joint with a bus driver when I was his only passenger. Okay, so, first of all, legalizing marijuana isn't about letting the 13-year-olds smoke marijuana at the Bob Dylan concerts. Clearly, keeping marijuana prohibited did not stop this woman from smoking marijuana at the Bob Dylan concert at age 13. So I fail to see so far how the solution is any worse than the problem than it solved. But let's go on to this. Let's see what else she says. She said that she says everyone believed you couldn't get addicted to pot. Turns out I could get hooked on carrot sticks. So now you're telling me that it's not the pot, it's the person who might have an issue with it, huh? Okay, I'm with you there. And from this point, she continues on with so many of these cherry-picked statistics with absolutely no context whatsoever. Here's some of the greatest hits, of course. She says 17% of the people who get high as teenagers will become addicted to marijuana. This is that old 1 in 6 teenagers that smokes pot will become addicted. Well, you know how they define addicted? They define addicted as someone who's smoking pot 4 times a month or more as an adult. So what you're saying here is 1 out of 6 kids that smoke pot as a teenager might smoke a joint on the weekend as an adult. That hardly sounds like addiction to me, especially considering watching my dad suffer through alcoholism and speed addiction. I kind of have an idea what addiction really is. She also goes on to say that half of daily marijuana smokers become addicted. Well, again, if your definition of being an addict is someone who uses marijuana regularly, it's no surprise that you come up with a self-serving answer like that. The question is whether or not someone is using marijuana to the point where it is detrimental to themselves and their life. And I won't deny there are some people that end up with an unhealthy dependence on marijuana. But as the author says, those people could have an unhealthy relationship with carrot sticks, with exercise, with sex, with gambling, with all sorts of problems. That's not a reason to criminalize the vast majority of people who don't have the problem. Now, she continues in talking about recovering from her addiction that addicts self-medicate because underlying every substance problem is a deep depression that feels unbearable. Well, for some people that are using marijuana, it's just depression, and they're using marijuana to cope with that depression. She also continues by saying that being drug-free saved my health, marriage, and career. Within a year, my income tripled. Well, gee, what do you know? It's easier to get a good-paying job when you're not failing a drug test or not going out for that job because there's a drug test involved. What a surprise. She then talks about how she works with a lot of young people in New York and LA who confess that they smoke a bowl or got ripped and then got in a car accident or fell on the subway tracks or had their wallet or cell phone stolen or they were sexually assaulted or they had a physical altercation that landed them in hospital or jail. And she goes on to mention how a lot of them talk about being cross-faded, which is using alcohol and marijuana together. Very interesting. Okay, so people that use a lot of alcohol get into a lot of these problems, and they might have used marijuana along with it. She brings up 2 deaths in Colorado linked to pot. Yeah, we've talked about those, the edibles, the kid that jumped off the building, and then the guy who was on painkillers, all sorts of other pharmaceuticals, who killed his wife. Hardly credible or compelling reasons there. She says the weed of today is far stronger than the weed of the past. Not true. There was plenty of strong weed back in the day. It might be twice as strong today, but that doesn't mean you're going to get higher off of it if you're smoking it or vaporizing it. You will stop when you get high. She also says the new edible products are 10 times stronger than a traditional joint. Wrong. Edible products have always been stronger dose for dose than anything you can take by smoking because the conversion of that in your gut, of THC in your gut, becomes 11-hydroxy-THC, which is far more psychoactive than delta-9-THC. It's a little thing called biology, chemistry, and science. All of them are in here. Double the risk of car crash, 12% deaths, lung cancer, heart attacks, IQ point loss. It's the greatest hits of Reefer Madness.
Maybe we should start at 420, right? Marijuana reference.
I don't even have enough time to get to all of it. She says marijuana essentially fries your brain and closes by saying we shouldn't send pot smokers to prison, but they don't belong on pop culture pedestals either. Yeah, remind me of that the next Super Bowl when I'm watching the Budweiser ads. Be back with Drug War Data Mining, a report on 2 years of legalization in Colorado, coming up next.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get high, Lee educated. Hey, tokers and tokettes, Radical Russ here for the Canador, a practical solution to keep herbs from drying. The Canador is the perfect airtight storage system for your fine herbs. From the half-inch thick walnut and cherry wood construction, clear-top perforated jars for storage, and the humidity bead system that keeps your herbs at a perfect 65% relative humidity. I keep all my herbs in the Canador, and you should too. Check out Canador.com for more information.
Funky Roller Rink.
Oh, yeah.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy, and I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Oh, yeah.
Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funky-licious.
It's always a party at the Funky Roller Rink.
Get Dot Buzz. Dot Buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. Dot Buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. Dot Buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. Dot Buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour, and in the Drug War Data Mines today, we turn to the Drug Policy Alliance that has just released their report on 2 years of legalization in Colorado. A blog post is up by Art Way. He's been a guest on the show. He's the state coordinator for Colorado for the Drug Policy Alliance, and he outlines a lot of what is covered in the report. According to state data, marijuana possession charges in Colorado for 2014 are on track to fall below 2,500, down from nearly 30,000 in 2010. 2,500 this year, last year, 2014, from 30,000 just 4 years before that. I don't know that anybody could look at that and not make the connection that that's an immense savings in police and court resources, in rehab resources that these people might have been forced into for their possession. Now maybe a meth addict or a heroin addict can actually get a spot in one of these places now that a bunch of people that were possessing pot aren't being forced into those spaces. Arrests for marijuana possession were responsible for 80% of all marijuana arrests in Colorado over the last 5 years. 4 out of 5 drug arrests in Colorado, four out of five arrests in Colorado for marijuana, I should say, for possession alone, those are largely gone now. And over the last 2 years, there's a 41% decrease in all drug arrests in the state. All drug arrests. This drop is attributed to allowing adults to possess, cultivate, and privately use marijuana. I would also argue that now that the smell of marijuana isn't the key that unlocks the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, that a lot of other hassles aren't happening that would have otherwise happened. Now, what else has changed? They say the medical marijuana industry is now tighter regulated as a integrated retail industry. It was refined to tax and regulate the market. They've brought in more than $40 million in marijuana taxes. And this is always funny when these numbers are brought up, because Kevin Sabet and the opponents, they'll like to say, well, they said it was going to be this many millions and it only came in this many millions. I love it when somebody can say it's bad that we only brought in $40 million in marijuana taxes when before we were bringing in, hold on, let me do the math. $0 in marijuana taxes. We increased, percentage-wise, that's infinity, okay? You went from zero to 40 million, and that's a good thing. That's not even counting, again, those 30,000 down to 2,500 arrests and all the money we saved on that as well. Also, we are seeing a slight decline in marijuana use rates among youth. Now, that was the Colorado Youth Risk Behavior Survey. Now, the most recent National Survey on Drug Use and Health has come out and shown a rise in youth rates. But I'm quick to point out that the rise you see in youth rates in Colorado, and for that matter, Washington, were surpassed by states like Florida and Utah. So it's not the legalization that may or may not be making kids use marijuana more. Traffic fatalities are at near historic lows, slightly lower than 2013. Now, nobody's saying that legalizing pot makes the roads safer, but it doesn't seem to be making them more dangerous. I always argue that people who are smoking pot and driving have already been doing it. It's already been in existence. You can't pretend that we've had millions and millions of pot smokers who have cars and not think that they've already been driving. If there were any sort of mayhem to be caused on the roadways because of the use of marijuana, we'd have seen that mayhem by now. We'd have seen that death and destruction by now, and we're not seeing it. Also, economically speaking, in Colorado, Colorado's ranked as one of the fastest growing economies in the nation. Their unemployment rate is at its lowest since 2008 and is well below the national average. And part of that can be attributed to the Marijuana Enforcement Division, which has issued over 10,000 employment cards, the cards that they have to get to work in the marijuana industry, 10,000 new jobs, direct marijuana jobs. Now think about all of the indirect jobs that support those direct jobs. And you start to understand why their economy is booming. We also understand that the relationship, there's things that can't be measured in the drug war data mine when we talk about legalization. And part of that is the relationship that's starting to become restored between the people and the police that are supposed to protect them. For too long, the criminality of marijuana has divorced, has cleaved the people who smoke pot that are good law-abiding citizens from the police that would serve them. I can't tell you how many times in my life as a marijuana consumer in Idaho, I looked the other way or didn't say anything or didn't report something because I knew reporting that could probably get more attention for me as a pot smoker than for whatever crime or indiscretion or violation I might have happened to witness. People shouldn't be considering whether or not to call 911 based on whether or not 911 is going to come for them. Marijuana legalization ends that for so many good law-abiding people. As we move forward, there's so much more to do. We have a long way to go to get from legalization to equalization. We deserve the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers, wine aficionados, and cigar smokers. And we'll keep working for that every day here on the Russ Belville Show.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
There's so much I worry about as a mom. Stephen Harper thinks that organized crime should continue to profit from marijuana prohibition. Imagine regulating marijuana like alcohol and cigarettes with a strong and clear educational message. making it more difficult for my kids and your kids to access. Drug dealers don't ask for ID. Stephen Harper does not have the kind of judgment we need to protect our children, authorized by the Normal Women's Alliance of Canada.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. Marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's half past, actually 31 after the hour, and we got a very special guest in the studio. We don't even have to go to our phone lines because he's right here. It's Doug Fine, the author of this fantastic book, Hemp Bound, and completely clad in hemp, I understand.
That's right. Hemp corduroys here. Check these out.
Oh, styling and profiling.
And here, while we're at it, here's the American Sign Language greeting for any of our hearing impaired.
So ASL greeting for hemp is, or this is just a greeting?
It's ASL. Yeah.
Far out. All right. So those watching on the web screen, I hope you enjoyed that. Those of you listening on the podcast have no idea what we just did. That's cool.
It involved disrobing.
That's right. While we got you here, I wanted to give you your own Russ Belville Show pin.
Oh, what an honor. So now you gotta, awesome.
You can add that. It's not made of hemp.
I am a one day. This too can be hemp.
One day. It absolutely can. And that's, you know, what we're here to talk about, Hemp Day, Hump Day. Uh-huh. And the timing couldn't be better because this is the first big hemp story of 2015, I think, is you going out to the Oregon legislature and what they're looking forward to as far as implementing the law we passed, I don't know, 3 years ago?
Yes. So this is very appropriate for a worldwide show, but based in Oregon, this is, we were discussing earlier, the second best timing for a hemp journalist discussion. The other one was the day cannabis prohibition ended officially on the federal level was last February 7th when President Obama signed the Farm Bill. I was able to speak with the amazing modern hemp pioneer Andrea Herman on her show. So to be on another great show talking hemp, it's a big, big day for Oregon. What happened yesterday was the Department of Agriculture held a hearing based on the hemp regulations that are going to govern the nascent industry. Oregon's recent past is distinct as any hemp states are. You want something clean the way Kentucky has it. They basically are saying, this is a Kentucky hemp heritage issue. We want it top to bottom, ag department top to bottom. And Oregon's got there as well through a different route. Laws being passed, and here in Measure 91 in the November 4th election, hemp was included explicitly. So hemp has to happen by state law. What's unique now is that everybody, top to bottom, recognizes that hemp's time has come, big picture worldwide, but in terms of agriculture, but in terms of Oregon especially. The Ron Pence, who is running the program, the regulatory hearings for the state ag department, has been doing a terrific job in making it happen. To give one example, he said flat out at this hearing yesterday, at which I testified and a number of other people did, it was a packed hearing room there in the Department of Agriculture building in Oregon's capital of Salem. Ron said, we want these regs done by February 2nd. That means Groundhog Day, hemp farmers are going to be able to start acquiring seed to plant a major economic and environmentally friendly crop this season. Big, big news for Oregon.
That's right. You heard it here first. Groundhog Day is Hemp Day here in Oregon. We'll finally get to implement this law that we've had. And a lot of this has to do with the federal government passing their regulation on saying, hey, if you've passed hemp, go for it.
Yeah. So it's the federal law right now is a fun little transition period until final full commercial hemp cultivation is legalized on the federal level. Where we're at right now is at this in-between stage. technically, what has been legalized in the federal farm bill, law of the land, is hemp is legal to cultivate for research purposes only in states that have their own hemp cultivation law, as long as a hemp farmer is in some way associated with the state agriculture department or an institution, an accredited institution of higher learning. How the state of Kentucky is interpreting that is, yeah, research, that includes sales and marketing research. So every bit of Kentucky's harvest from 2014 had a buyer. Why not? It's an industry growing in double digits. So really, it's de facto legalization, but there are hoops that have to be gone through until we see that full commercial cultivation. In the meanwhile, the DEA, which has already been issuing permits for farmers to import hemp seed as long as they go through some regulatory hoops, has also been explicitly prohibited in recent federal legislation from interfering with state hemp programs.
Right. That's the attachment to the Cromnibus bill. And everybody points out that it legalized, it took the hands off of medical marijuana, that it ended the DEA raids on the medical marijuana states. A lot of people are losing the fact that, no, it also protects the hemp states, too.
Yeah, two separate provisions.
That's fantastic news. We're here with Doug Fine, author of Hemp Bound, at Organic Cowboy on the Twitter, if you're onto the Twitter stuff. And as far as these Oregon farmers and these people that are involved in trying to get this, what's your take on their understanding of the issue? Have they gotten better educated and are raring to go now?
Oregon farmers. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if one role that I'd like to play as somebody who cares a lot about Oregon, it's just such a fantastic state that does things right. When they do it, they do them right, generally, here in the Beaver State. And one of the roles I would like to play is helping to fill in those gaps. Since I've been researching the hemp industry around the world, one of the hardest things, for instance, is going to be for farmers to get seed. They need to know how to go through the hoops.
And this happened in Kentucky. Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, the two senators there, had to intervene and say, hey, DEA, they were trying to get hemp seed from Italy, wasn't it?
That's right. So hopefully to avoid that this year, I'm a little bit surprised to hear Kentucky officials still talking, you know, somewhat adversarial effect. Like, I hope we don't have to go lawsuit again. I don't think that's going to happen anymore because I believe that DEA will sign off on permits in this kind of it's a face-saving political thing where the DEA is still claiming that it's Schedule One, even though federal law says not for research purposes. But they're expediting applications when people go through the hoops according to the, and that's so we play this game now as a compromise to avoid lawsuits until full commercial hemp cultivation passes, hopefully in this Congress. That's something folks really, you got to get on the horn about because it didn't happen in the last Congress. There is support. There's the votes, regardless of the fact it's not a GOP Democratic issue. The right. leader of the Senate right now is Senator Mitch McConnell, who is passionately in support of hemp. It's the Industrial Hemp Cultivation Act now going to be introduced of 2014. Get your senators and Congress folks on it. Congressman Earl Blumenauer here in Oregon is a leader on that on the House side.
Excellent, excellent stuff. You can find that out. And if you can't, just email me, russ@radicalrust.com. I'll get you hooked up with whatever you need to know. We're talking with Doug Fine about industrial hemp on our Hemp Day Hump Day. And in our next segment, we'll continue. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. If you've got any questions about industrial hemp, this would be the time to ask. And I've got one from our chat room where we opened by noting your all hemp outfit. We're not going to verify the boxers. We're not doing that.
Is that what the caller wants to know?
No. The boxers are briefs. No, it's not a Bill Clinton question.
Russ. I saw that tweet. I'm going to verify it. Right now.
All right.
Close your eyes.
All right. Verifying the boxers. Boxers.
These are homemade hemp organic boxers. Hemp boxers.
Wow.
Right there.
That's amazing. So our chatter wanted to know. You know, he said, I really want to get some cheap hemp clothes. Where can people get hemp clothes?
Great question. So there's a number of tons of places you can already get them. But one thing I want to have folks keep their eyes on is, as with any consumer product, try and think locally and try and think sustainably. So keep your eye on where it's made and look for locally made hemp. There is one fellow who I just met at the Emerald Cup a few years ago. I'm looking up his name right now. His company is Parallel Revolution, and he's hand making mostly shirts now. They're very nice looking. So look up Parallel Revolution. I want to say his name is Jake, and let's see. Yep, his name is Jake. Parallel Revolution, nice guy. I believe he's based in Indiana. Then you have Envirom Textiles, which is a woman-owned company that's been around forever, mother and daughter owned, and they mostly import textiles now from China. But my own sweetheart makes a lot of hemp clothing, nothing that I'm wearing today, and gets most of the fabric from there. And you'd be amazed at how soft it is. You don't have to go blends. You don't have to incorporate synthetics in there. Hemp, as it has been historically, hemp textiles can be very soft when they're made from the highest end of the bast fiber, hemp's famous bast fiber. And then look for good retailers. I think these are Hempist. My cords we showed earlier are Hempist. I think they're a Boston-based retailer. There's tons of good Recreator out there. There's tons of good retailers out there for you to get your hemp clothing. Now, cheap, that's get yourself a sewing machine, order the fabric, and learn how to make it yourself, which is kind of what we do on the Funky Butte Ranch.
Yeah, right? I would, you know, factor in when you're thinking of the cost of a hemp garment, also factor in how much longer it's going to last, you know, than something that's cotton or something denim.
Not to mention that 30% of the world's pesticides come from cotton. You know, forgive me for sounding, I don't know, bossy or whatever, but I urge people, do not buy non-organic cotton. It's a pesticide toxin on your body and in the soil.
Good point, good point. And we're looking for those prices to come down in hemp clothing, and really it's the prohibition that's causing that, because were hemp just as legal as it was in the 18th or 19th century even, this would be the cheapest thing to make clothing out of, wouldn't it?
Exactly. And so along those lines, this is something I brought up while I was testifying at those Oregon hemp rigs yesterday. This is it right here. This is hemp seed heart. So this is when you behold the seed, shell. You can also eat the shells. You can render the oil. I do all of it. You can get the protein cake that's left over after squeeze. Great, and also great for your livestock feed. My goats can't wait. but this is expensive. I'm a big supporter of this company, Nutiva, and I also love Manitoba. It's all good. Manitoba Harvest, all the expensive Canadian hemp seed that's now crossing the $1 billion threshold, I think largely to my own family's, you know, morning shakes over the years. And it's time for the prices and the carbon miles to come down on this product.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue with Doug Fine, author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail. We're going to enjoy some hemp hearts, I guess it is.
Yeah, that is.
Hemp hearts. All right. Enjoy. And we'll come back. We'll take more of your questions as well. Plus, got a great question on hemp and its varieties, and also want to talk a little bit about more about you having 1 foot in the suburban world and 1 foot in, you know,
Goat milker?
Goat milker? Yeah, I guess that's the right tune. All right. Thanks for sticking around, everybody. Get this book. It's great. Willie Nelson says it's a blueprint for America of the future. I agree. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you're looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and save 5% instantly, or give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby!
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Hey, Joey, I got some stuff you just gotta try.
What is it?
Pot.
You know, marijuana.
Oh, well, I don't know.
What, chicken?
Joey's in a jam. What should he do? Cake.
Get a pizza.
Excellent.
Get a pizza.
Get real.
Get
you got it. Let's see if Joey's that smart.
I'm not chicken. You're a turkey.
He's right. Drug dealers are dorks. Don't even talk to him.
Cowabunga!
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 46 after the hour, and not so much ranting today as chatting with Doug Fine, who's here in the studio. Welcome back, Doug.
Great to be with you, Russ.
Oh, I gotta turn your mic on. Now, welcome back, Doug.
Still freaking fantastic to be with you.
Still great to be here. Hey, we got some questions from our chat room that I wanted to bring up for you. The first one was about your hat. Is the hat made of hemp?
The band on the hat is made of hemp. Probably a good deal of my skin and my body structure is made of hemp. We put at least 2 tablespoons of hemp seed oil into our morning shake. These hemp hearts here, I like to throw in the yogurt. Sorry for eating in the studio, Ruff.
And, no problem.
I just did a piece folks can find on site called, online called Vitamin Hemp about what the real nutritive truth is about this. You know, one of the hardest parts, we've talked about this on earlier Hump Day Hemp Day segments, Russ, is that the hardest part about reporting on hemp is that your roommate with the lava lamp was right or didn't go far enough in the truth about hemp and how good it is and how valuable it is. So on the nutritive side, this piece I did was quoting researchers whose talks I had seen at the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance and elsewhere. Just bottom line, real nutritive studies and the omega balance profile on hemp, the type of amino acid building blocks that hemp has, the type of proteins, the mineral content, the magnesium, the selenium. I'm pretty much made out of, as are my kids, human and goat. We're made out of this stuff at this point on the Funky Butte Ranch because it is that good for you.
Fantastic. And another question, and this is an interesting one. I hadn't thought about this before. Vendicar wanted to know, is there a ridiculous number of hemp strains as there are psychoactive strains?
Not as many. On the hemp side, if you want to sound really professional and know, strains are called cultivars. If you want to just have a, you know, the equivalent of a gender neutral term, you can say variety of cannabis for any, whether a strain or a cultivar. But when we are talking about what we today define as industrial hemp or agricultural hemp, we call them cultivars. And there are a number of approving agencies around the world. I would say at this moment, I think they're in the neighborhood of 24 or so officially approved cultivars. And it's a good question and an important question for a number of reasons. I'll sum up one of the main important reasons it's an important question, and that is, as we rebuild the tragically lost, once world-leading hemp germplasm here in the States, which was once taxpayer-funded by the USDA, and we were far and away the producer of the world's finest hemp, as we rebuild, do we use Darwin's cultivar, the wild ditchweed that remains in the Wisconsins and the Nebraskas?
Yeah. You can still find plenty of that, yeah.
Or do we play by the rules of modern agriculture, which is about uniformity and documentable quality control and all those issues. And I believe it's a balance of the two, because we Americans are going to figure out cool apps. For instance, right now, hemp can be a great biofuel and hemp bound. There's an incident where I drive around in a hemp-powered limo once owned by the Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos. thank you, Bill Altos, my good friend and hemp researcher and engineer. It works, but we don't have cultivars yet designed specifically for fuel that are oil cultivars. So some smart bunch of farmers is going to get that going.
Right.
And a million other hemp apps we can talk about.
Sure.
And that's going to be about being smart and crossbreeding in the Gregor Mender natural way, the way that Americans, as Michael Pollan calls psychoactive cannabis farmers, the best gardeners of his generation.
Yeah.
They developed, thank God, what humanity wanted in terms of psychoactive cannabis. So we're going to see that very quickly.
So we're going to have an oil hemp. We're going to have a seed hemp. We're going to have a stalk hemp and so on.
Flower hemp for nutraceuticals, sure. Fiber for textiles, fiber for industrial components, fiber for construction.
And then you've spoken with us before on the show about triple cropping, you say?
Tri-cropping, yep.
And there would be probably varietals or cultivars that would work better for that purpose as well.
Yeah, in other words, hybrids, right, exactly. Yeah. So the equivalent on the psychoactive side of
a hybrid,
of a hybrid, right. So that's the second way that I really hope to help Oregon farmers this year. The first way is helping them get to seed so they can get the stuff in the ground. Then what about on the harvest? What do you do then? There's a lot of things you can do. The price out of the ground for seed, basically seed applications, is for Canadian farmers right now, $350 profit. That's profit per acre. A great year for soy predicted South Dakota State this year, $71 profit in a great year for South Dakota farmers. So we're talking about 4-5 times the profit level right out of the ground for something that doesn't require pesticides and herbicides. So it's profitable and worth it there. And that's why we're seeing legalization, is because it's the economy stupid kind of thing. Like farmers are not dumb. They're businessmen and businesswomen. But once you control the processing vertically in your farming community, you're increasing your value 100-fold, if not more. So in other words, if Oregonian farmers process a certain amount of 1,000 acres in an eastern Colorado, once struggling, now thriving farming community, and sell it immediately to a big Canadian processor, that's going to be good money for the community. But if they have a facility in their community that allows them to bottle it and call it Oregon-grown salad dressing, toothpaste component, whatever it is. I use a hemp toothpaste from Slovenia with clay and mint and hemp in it. Then they're really making bank. And so tri-cropping is everything that a farming community needs to do that value added. It's called the three legs of the tri-cropping are, one, everything you can do with the seed oil, the grain, and flour. So nutraceuticals, food, industrials, oils. There's Hemp Shield, a company based here in Oregon that does a great wood finish and decking coating. The second leg is anything you can do with fiber. I'm really excited about next generation batteries and supercapacitors. I've done some reporting on that as well. If folks want to Google hemp is coming to your car battery, I'm really excited about that. And then the third is waste biomass for energy. Power your own facility, at least, if not your whole community, as some towns in Germany are doing, through the waste biomass. So that's the three legs of tri-cropping, plus providing the facility and the harvesting equipment and the storage equipment that farmers need. That's what I want to help do by the time of the harvest, is have these facilities around the state where people are cultivating hemp. So when they harvest it, Oregon farmers and wherever you place these, the local community farmers are going to be able to profit.
And this is going to be amazing for not just the rural farm communities that have suffered in Oregon, but also a lot of people whose jobs were caught up in the timber industry that suffered as well. And I think a lot of the skill set that would be involved with timber could transfer to working with hemp in some way.
No question about it. I think it's a forestry issue. It's about rebuilding soil and providing jobs. In the end, we are a nation that had 30% of population farming when cannabis prohibition started in 1937, and we're down to 1% of farmers now. And the reason is they can't make a living at it. And I get emails all the time from people that aren't even among the 20 and growing hemp states that are in accordance with federal law right now, saying, we gave up our, 40 or 400 or 4,000 acre Missouri or North Dakota or whatever farm 20 years ago because we didn't want to be part of this chemical corn GMO cycle. And that cycle wasn't making us any money, wasn't good for the land, wasn't healthy for us. So, screw it. We became software designers and wherever. But wait a second. Are farmers really making 350 clear per acre in Canada on this thing? Because if we can grow hemp and do it right, we want to come back and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. We got a call coming in on the phone line, 970 area code. What's your question for Doug Fine?
Hi there. Enjoying the show today. How's it going?
Fantastic. Thanks.
Great. I had connections with a quarry, and I'm hoping the guests could talk about hempcrete or hemp and lime specifically and the directions it's headed and maybe who's leading the way and that type of thing, and I'll take the call off the air. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Hempcrete, we've covered that a couple of times on the show. Pretty amazing stuff. How strong? I mean, where's it going?
I'm really glad that we have this call because it's sort of, you heard it here first on the Russ Belville show. In Hempbound, following a lot of research, including on-site at hempcrete construction sites, hempcrete studies at universities, I really posited from a lot of sources that a likely first killer app on the fiber side for the U.S. market would be hempcrete. Hemp mixed with some sort of sustainable local binder, locally provided binder, like lime, like a lime, there are others, for construction, and we can talk about how those could be used. But the reason why it looked to be so promising, besides the fact that the hemp apps that win are win because they outperform in the marketplace. I mean, it works. Better insulation quality, better R value, as they say, than, you know, the sort of semi-toxic or really toxic drywall, fiberglass, you know, era that we've been living in the box store era. So the reason why it looked to be the first killer app is the Canadians, the North American market, the Canadians do almost nothing with the fiber. So we have a steep learning curve to learn when it comes to any fiber application install. When you talk about textiles, that's a high-skilled thing. Nanotechnology stuff, car parts, potentially has a learning curve. But the second element in the hemp fiber, the herd, the woody core, is a little bit less of a rocket science, although you do have to produce it well for it to be a good construction app. But it's easier, and there's a lot of it, and you can just harvest the crop, chop it up, not worry about being delicate as you do with the long bast fiber and the high-end specialty applications. Bag it up, and there is your construction material. So it looked like, and it so outperforms on energy and insulation qualities that Marks & Spencer department store in Britain has built a block-long flagship store out of it because they want to save money on their energy costs.
Sure.
They want to pay lower energy bills on a vast store that they've got to keep warm in Britain through the winter.
Yeah.
And it's working out great. They're very happy about it. And so it's working out great. So done right, hempcrete can be fantastic. The other thing that's really good about and carbon sequestration, you don't have to do the high heat associated with construction. It's something like 10% of greenhouse gases are emitted from the construction industry these
wow.
days. Yeah, maybe 5%, some huge amount. It's quoted in HempBound. So there also is this nice element of it's a hands-on, relatively easy way to build. I mean, you can spray it from a sprayer, stack it on with hands, do it in a more kind of industrial way where you're tamping down large amounts. You talk to the folks, and I've talked to the folks, and the book records it, who are building with the stuff, and everybody's happy with how nice and easy it is in the high-quality, nice-looking homes, high-end type homes. And the only thing that is slowing down, of course, it's prohibition, the rush to have hemp-based construction is the fact that it's expensive to import anything. So that would include herd as well. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of roadblocks in front of what today we're calling hempcrete. And one of them is regulatory issues. Building codes are pretty strict. Today you have to do this sort of song and dance to even be allowed to build with it. You got to just call it fill in most places instead of, you know, insulating, let alone load-bearing. It can play great roles in soundproofing. There's a lot of great applications that hemp-based building material can be, but there's other issues. Lime is not always sustainable in every ecosystem. Mm-hmm. As far as the binder goes, again, there all are alternatives. Plus, if you vary the mix, how much herd you put in, how much lime, it could impact quality. So there's a lot. There's a long learning curve. There's a lot of other great things that you could potentially do. Like there's a fellow and traditional building techniques. Hemp adobe type stuff is something that I think should be a big thing in the future. And I want to point out something that was brought up to me the other day, which is a potential application of 3D printing biomaterials like hemp for houses in the future. That's neat, and I think that it's something with all of the sort of things that we might generally keep under the topic of nano, digital age, 3D printing kind of wonderful applications, that's fine. But I think one of the big lessons of the 21st century is finding a balance between the blind belief that technology and science is going to solve everything versus the fact that with all these billions of people, many of them urban, not everybody is going to have the time to slap together their own house. So there's a balance there, but I just want to throw out there, if you've got a sophisticated 3D printer, is a village in Bangladesh or Mali going to be able to afford it? And if so, if the Gates Foundation this pops it in there, who's fixing it?
When it breaks.
When it breaks or when the software upgrade happens, which is not to say, Russ, I'm sure there are many more technical savvy people in Mali and Bangladesh than I, but point, you know, it has to do with income, it has to do with lifestyle.
Sorry to cut you off, Doug. That's all the time we got, but we'll stay tuned for hour two. We'll come back and finish this thought. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.